This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm back, baby. That's right. I'm washing my hair again. But not washing my hair with just anything. There's only one product I will put in my hair, and it's made by Modern Mammals. Head over to modernmammals.com/pages/LSS for 10% off with promo code LSS. For a long time, I completely swore off shampoo. It leaves your hair dry, overly fluffy, unmanageable, and just not looking great. There's a bunch of leftover residue in that stuff too, and it just robs your hair of its natural oils and throws off the pH balance. Modern Mammals just doesn't do that. My hair feels brand new every time I use it, and it's been a complete game changer for me. But you know what? Don't just take my word for it either. Head over to their website, read the reviews. This stuff really is awesome. You're going to feel the difference, and people are going to notice the difference as well. So head over to modernmammals.com/pages/LSS and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use that promo code LSS so they know I sent you. And remember, supporting our sponsors is supporting me. Today's episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app today to find great deals on sports and concert tickets near you. Go to the settings tab of the app and enter promo code SHANE20 and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where myself, Shane Told, talks to other lead singers about what it's like to front a band. Before we get into the episode, I want to thank everybody for the feedback. Last week, wow, what an episode. My favorite one for sure so far with my friend Will from Aiden and William Control. He really put himself out there. And I actually went back and I listened to that podcast. And I think I've listened to it all the way through 3 or 4 times now. And wow, if you guys missed that one, definitely go back and check that out. As I said, I love hearing feedback from you guys. So please get in touch about anything you want. We have an email address that's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I don't always get back to everybody, but I do read all my email. Also, we got a Snapchat, which is my personal Snapchat, which I'm quite good at replying on for some reason. And that's real Shane Told. Shane Told was taken. Also, we're on Twitter at LeadSingerSyn, S-Y-N, and on Instagram at LeadSingerSyndrome. So please check all that out. Today we have a great episode. I talked to Garrett Rapp of The Color Morale, who is quite a bit different from, you know, the classic lead singer. The classic, you know, you think back to the 70s and the 80s and how these lead singers were mysterious and they would keep distance from the fans, you know, and it would be like, oh my God, you met that guy? That's so crazy. Garrett is not like that. Garrett is very accessible to his fans, and he's made that important to him, and that's pretty much what The Color Morale is known for. We talk about that a lot in this episode. We talk about a lot of other things, but I want to let you guys know, The Color Morale, they have a brand new album. It's coming out August 19th. The song Walls is out right now, and they're on the entire Warped Tour. So go see them. Go check them out. I'm sure if you walk around, you'll find Garrett, and he'll talk to you about pretty much anything. I'm going to try to keep this intro short, but if you want to support the show, it's super, super easy. Do you buy things online? Do you sometimes buy things on Amazon? They sell everything. So if you do, all you got to do is go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. That takes you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal, and anything you buy, our show gets 4%. And that stuff can add up. So please, anytime you're going to buy something online, just pop in that URL. It'll take you right there and you're good to go. All right, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Garrett Rapp of The Color Morale.
I'll build this wall to keep the outside world from me and the fight to stay in the hell of my own heart. You stay for all the inside.
Dude, it's been a long time since I talked to you.
I know. I was thinking about that, like, that last tour that we did. Like, I've been thinking a lot about, like, the last couple of years of touring and how much you get to the end of the tour and you're like, I didn't fucking hang out with them, like, at all.
Yeah, I know,
or, like,
man.
I didn't do anywhere near, like, especially going on Warped again next week, I thought about Warped 2014 and how much I didn't hang out with, you know, friends that were on the tour, like, that I wanted to, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's weird how that happens, too. Like, different tours, there's a different vibe, you know? And it also, a big thing that people don't talk about is, a big part of it is, like, the routing. You know what I mean? Because if you're in a van, like you guys were, and the, like, that, it was the We Came As Romans tour that we did together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And remember, those drives were, like, ruthless.
They were brutal, yeah.
And they were some of the weirdest, like, markets and weirdest venues we played, and that's what you can chalk it up to. You know, when you guys have to leave, like, right after you play because you got to drive overnight and then everyone's tired all day, like, no wonder nobody's hanging out, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I know, like, that I kind of made, like a personal goal for myself to do merch for the band, like, as much as humanly possible. So that's, like, at the same time, like, I'm glued to that table all night because there's kids that want to hang out and talk. And, you know, it's like, man, it was brutal. I'd get in the van after some of those nights and just – we'd go to a gas station and get food, and before I even ate it, I fell asleep, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, that's like a great place to jump in right there. I mean, that's, you know, you're the guy that's kind of known for, you know, putting himself out there, that's, you know, always available to his fans. How did that kind of start with that? And was that a conscious decision to do that, or did it sort of just happen?
Yeah, I think that kind of all started around our third record time. We did an album called No Hope.
Yep.
And I think that was a time in my life where I was going through a divorce. I was going through a lot of life changes. I think I was really struggling with, I think I've struggled with depression since I was a kid. And, you know, something that kind of detrimental can really trigger, you know, pretty extraordinary levels of that. So I think for me, you know, when I kind of seclude myself, that's when I get in my own head and I start, you know, becoming a roadblock for myself. So I kind of figured, you know, maybe if I go to merch and I put myself there, you know, and mind you, this is the time in the band was just kind of starting to grow, going from our second to third record. And we hadn't really gained a huge fan base yet or anything. It was, it was a very stressful time doing that No Hope record. That was, I think there was a point in time where I actually quit the band for like a week while we're in the studio. I was driving back and forth 7 hours, one way, you know, a handful of times going through a divorce process. And it was a very difficult time. So when we started touring on that record, you know, I thought maybe to be proactive and to really be, try to be optimistic, I'll be a merch and I'll, you know, just hang out and talk to whoever wants to talk.
Sure.
And it was kind of crazy, like putting out the record, you know, with the theme that was on the record, and, so many people connected to the lyrical content and the place where I was personally. So, you know, I think that's something that impressionable and young adults struggle with even more prevalently now than ever, is, you know, just detrimental subject matter, whatever it may be. So
you're talking about like you're talking about other bands and sort of being negative.
No, more so just being, you know, being a young adult in society nowadays.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, how many times do you, kids are all about social media, you know, how many times do you scroll through Facebook and just see how fucking bummed out everybody is?
Right. I got rid of Facebook. I got rid of Facebook years ago for that reason.
Exactly.
I couldn't handle
exactly.
it anymore, man.
It's, I learned a while ago, like, you know, you got to stop reading comment boards. You have to stop reading comment sections because it's, kids are just so ignorant nowadays, you know? And it's,
Well, I mean, you're doing your part. I mean, like that's one thing. I mean, obviously I think most people listening to this probably know who you are, and they probably know a little bit about your past because, as I heard you say once, you're kind of an open book. And I think that, you know, you putting yourself out there is important to you, so people kind of understand where you're coming from. But if you don't mind starting a little bit from the beginning of, you know, kind of how you got into where you are, you know, being this singer, this lyricist, this in some ways, I don't want to say social worker, but in a way you kind of are like the scene social worker. And I kind of want to just talk about how you got involved with, you know, music, punk rock, and then how you ended up being in a band and here you are today. If, and also, you know, your kind of your journey with through, you know, your own depression and stuff. If you don't mind, if you mind kind of telling us the story.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a story a lot of people probably don't know. So it's kind of a
well, we got lots
cool
of time
to go
so
through.
That's the beauty of this show is, you know, you feel free to be long winded, and that's the whole thing is like having all those little details that maybe not everyone knows that are important.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. Like I never really had like ambitious rock star dreams or wanting to be a guy in a band or, you know, wanting to be a singer at all, really. I kind of just ended up in a band on accident, to be honest. So I guess I'll started back. I was around 15 or 16 years old. I used to run an indoor skate park called the Pit Skate Park in Rockford.
Cool.
And I booked punk rock shows there, little DIY shows. I think Silverstein played a show there long time. We're talking like 10 plus years ago.
Really? Did you say Rockford?
Yeah, Rockford, Illinois, at the Pitt Skate Park. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, this is years ago, like a long time ago.
I think I might remember this, but it's very foggy. But
yeah.
We've documented like all of our shows ever. So I can find it pretty quick, but yeah, I mean, that's it. Very well might be true.
Yeah, I think it was a show with like Emery and man, I'm trying to think of who else was on. This was a long time ago.
It's very possible.
Yeah, but so yeah, I used to book like little punk rock shows there. I was a pretty serious bike rider back in the day, and I do like traveling stunt shows and my job when I came home was to run the skate park.
Wow.
So there was a little quarter pipe there. There was an old punk rock band. They used to practice there. One of the guys that worked at the skate park used to have his bands, you know, it was like their little rehearsal spot underneath a quarter pipe. So it was very like the Foot Clan layer from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie.
I totally know what you mean. Have you ever played the venue in Montreal, Fufun's Electronique?
No.
Foofs, they call it sometimes?
No.
Okay, it's like a bar everyone hangs out with it after, and it's like the same. It's like a venue, but they have like a skate park, and every time I'm in there, I always like reminds me of the Foot Clan lair.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I remember seeing that movie and being like, man, I want to join the Foot Clan. This looks awesome.
I know, exactly. I was like, the setting for that is exactly, you know, what the skate park was.
Right.
You know, I found that place when I was in high school. I didn't really have any friends in high school. I was kind of I started a new school freshman year. You know, I had a single mother, divorced parents. So I kind of had a disconnect at that point in my life from people and, you know, my surroundings. So when I found the skate park, that was kind of a cool, you know, I was literally joining like the Foot Clan. There was a group of guys that rode there all the time and guys that skated, and they were just, you know, like-minded and awesome people. And that was kind of my thing that I did every day. I went to the skate park. So
that was sort of your escape. That was sort of your escape at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah. That was my creative outlet where I felt like I fit in and I felt like, you know, I felt comfortable. So, you know, fast forward, I think I'm like 16 years old and the guy that owns a skate park, comes up to me. I was literally like that park rat that was there every day of the week.
Yep.
And, he comes up and he's like, "Hey man, what do you got going on this weekend? Are you busy?" And I was like, "Yeah, I was just going to be here all weekend, to be honest." And he had a wedding that he had to go to out of town in like Minnesota. So he asked me, you know, hey, if I teach you how to run the register and program the alarm, can you run the skate park for a couple of days and work? Wow. And, you know, and lock up at the end of the night. And you know, mind you, I'm like 16 years old and extremely like extroverted. So I'm not like you're, you know, assertive, like confident. Yeah, I can totally do this kind of kid. So I learned all this stuff and I learned how to do the register and program the alarm in like 10 minutes. And then he left. And, you know, I wanted to like, I was like, man, this would be like my first job. Like, so I wanted to make a, you know, make an impact. And I went and like mopped the whole skate park after we closed. And I was there early the next day, cleaned the whole pro shop and organized. And
wow,
he came home and he was like, dude, this is amazing. Like, place looks brand new. And I was like, yeah, just, it's a dirty skate park. So something to do, you know? So, then he just kind of offered me a job and that became like my second home. So I feel like music and, you know, BMX and skateboarding at that point were very synonymous. And naturally, I moved, the skate park closed in 2004, I believe. I moved to Oklahoma for a year. And when I moved back, one of the kids that I knew that skateboarded there asked me, hey man, we got this band, like we need a singer. Do you want to join this band? And I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about singing. So no, not really. And he's like, well, we know you can get a shows cause you used to book shows.
Right.
And so we know like, you're
what,
a writer.
Am I just the show guy?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, I didn't know anything about, you know, that I knew how to be at a show and enjoy music cause you know, and right. I knew how to write. So anyways, I ended up going to practice and, you know, I was like, bring your notebook. Like, I know you write all the time. And, you know, like, that's kind of what I wanted to do in high school was be a journalism major or, you know, at that
point.
So
writing was important to you earlier in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think writing was something I found, when I was young as kind of a coping mechanism. I went through a lot of heavy stuff when I was young. So, you know, writing was a way for me to put it in front of me and process and kind of get out of my own head. So it's funny, like, you know, I hear so many kids talk about, you know, well, I like to write, but I don't know how I could ever make a career out of it. I'm not a writer. And it's like, dude, if you have a napkin and a pencil, you're a writer. Like,
of
you know, I'm not a intellectual genius. I just like to be creative. I'm a right brainer and I like to write things that, express myself, you know, through,
I like
to be creative.
The other thing too, that people need to understand, and I'm sure there's a lot of aspiring writers that listen to the show. It's like, you're going to get better. You know, the first
thing we wrote,
the first thing you wrote that I wrote that anyone wrote was probably pretty crappy. You know, like you have to go through a lot of, you know, figuring it out yourself and going through the trial and error of you know, of writing. And especially, you know, when we get into singing and we talk about that, like that's the ultimate trial and error thing. No one's good away. You know,
no.
I mean, like maybe Johnny Craig, but we'll talk about him later. you know, but it's true. Like there, you know, there's not a lot of people in this world that have that God-given talent. Most people,
yeah,
if not, you know, 99.999 and the rest percent of people work for it. And that's what I think people need to understand.
Right. You have to start somewhere. Like
exactly.
I don't feel like I ever had a God-given gift. I mean, you know,
me neither.
Like even as a singer in a band, like we go up and play in front of, you know, hundreds of people constantly, but like, man, if I look at my childhood and, you know, my upbringing, like where I came from, I wasn't social at all. I couldn't stand in front of two people and even finish a sentence at one point in my life, let alone, you know, a crowd every night and playing shows about extremely, you know, raw and organic elements of my life. Like that's crazy. So,
right.
It's, you know, not a lot of people, you know, have that God-given gift. But yeah, it's work ethic and how much you want to put in. It's, you know, the old, you get what you give mentality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so you got into music through the skate park. Was this band kind of the beginning of Color Morale, or was it a totally different band?
Yeah, this was this is Steve. Steve and I. Steve's a drummer. Him and I are the two original members of this old band.
What were you guys called?
It was called the Killer Apathy.
Okay.
Yeah, this is we had the two front men, the screamer and the singer thing, and it was just, you know.
And which one were you?
I was the singer.
Okay.
And at that point, I think I sounded like, imagine if there was like a band where Alvin fronted the band and the Chipmunks, but Alvin was the singer. That was me in this band. Yeah. And if you're listening, don't even bother trying to find the music. It's not even worth it. But it was funny because like the songs, we had two EPs, as a local band, and
yeah.
We never toured. We never did anything outside of the Midwest. Listening back, like Steve has been a prodigy, like talk about God given gift.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That's that kid in drumming. So it's like, you know, Steve and as a drummer and the guitar players in the band at the time, were unreal. They were so talented. And I'm like, you know, this dude who can't sing to save his life. Like I end up in this band with these great musicians and it's like, you know, they set a bar really high. So it was kind of cool. It was very challenging for me to learn quickly. Like I had to, you know?
Yeah.
So, and not only singing, but the dynamics of being a front man and being, leading a crowd and all the,
so would you say at that time you were kind of just sort of pretending that you knew what you were doing? Because that's something comes up a lot on this show, which is the whole, you know, fake it till you make it.
Yeah. And I feel like at that point, I didn't even know what pretending meant. I was like, you know, like, I guess I just grab this microphone and I just do whatever I feel like doing, you know, at that point.
That's what it's all about,
like,
though. I mean, that's what it should be about, is about expressing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. At that point in time, I think my favorite band was American Nightmare. To see Wes go up and, you know, there's no script. There's no, we jump here together or we throw our guitars together. And, you know,
no.
I've never been that way. And I could never be that way. Not judging bands that do that. It's just for me personally, I have to just act how I feel in the moment and, you
right.
know,
I get it.
Hope that I don't look like a dumbass. So yeah, I, at that point in time, it was, and I look at my, like my surroundings and, you know, I was seeing punk rock bands play every weekend. I'd see bands like, one of my favorite memories back in the skate park days was, I got there at like 11 a.m. to fill the pop machines and get ready for this big show that we were having of this band I'd never heard of. But we're supposed to be a pretty big rock band. And, so I'm filling the pop machines and I get a knock on the door and I go and I open the door and there's this dude standing there.
I love that you say pop, cause we say pop here too. We don't, we don't say soda. We say pop. Anyways, continue.
What is soda? I don't even know what soda is.
Can I have a soda? Yeah, no. anyway, sorry, continue.
I get this knock on the door, and this guy's like, hey, man, my name's Chuck. We got here kind of early. Is it cool if we heard you guys got like a 7-foot bowl in here? Could we come in and skate? I know you're not open yet. And I was like, yeah, dude. I'm just filling the pop machine, so I'll turn the lights on.
I hope this is the Chuck. I think it is, but continue.
Yeah. I look out and they've got this RV and they, you know, a couple of dudes just kind of chilling. It was like 1,000 degrees. So they're just chilling with their shirts off, drinking a PBR. So they come in the park and, I had no idea who this band was and we're just chilling, riding the bull. I got my bike and hanging out with these guys so I'm like, so what are you guys called? He's like, oh, we're called Hot Water Music.
Yeah, there it is.
I was like, oh yeah, you guys have a record I just got. Cause I saw we booked you guys. So I checked out one of your CDs. I went up to the CD store cause that's what you did back then. You went to a CD store.
Yeah, of course.
And I got one of the records. They were awesome. And it was, just the most down to earth dudes. Like we ended up riding for a couple hours and they're like, man, we really appreciate it. Like, you know, tonight, if there's anything at a merch table you want, just go take one of everything. Like, nice. You know, whatever. So I still have that Hot Water Music hoodie to this day.
I have an old Hot Water Music hoodie too. That's just like says Hot Water Music across the front, pull over. It's got the like the logo on the back. That's funny, man. You bring up Hot Water Music because that for Silverstein, it was one of our biggest influences. It's Billy, our bass player's favorite band of all time. He has the most insane Hot Water Music vinyl collection. He has literally everything they've put out, and he has records that there's only one of. And he has them.
Yeah.
So when we got a tour with Hot Water Music, I remember back in like 04, and that was to us like that was the pinnacle of the career. Like when we were like,
yeah.
You know, people ask you like the cliche questions like, "Hey Garrett, man, when did you know you made it?" You know, like that question. And if I have any answer, it's when we got confirmed as direct support on a Hot Water Music tour. We were like, oh, man, like, this is the best thing ever. And then, of course, like, the nicest guys, like Chuck Reagan is just, like, the biggest sweetheart ever.
The coolest guys. I mean, like, just riding the bowl together. And I didn't know who the band was. I didn't. I was just, like, just riding the park and hanging out with a bunch of dudes that were just super down to earth and super laid back and, you know, come to fast forward all these years later. And it's like, man, that's one of my favorite bands now. Like,
yeah,
I think they were a favorite band before I even heard them play music. Like, you know, it's funny. Like,
yeah, that's such a cool thing. Yeah.
We have so many friends in bands that it's like, you know, we can to be totally honest, man, I'll probably never listen to your band, but I will watch you guys all the time just because I love you, dude. Like, you're one of my favorite people on earth, but I'll probably never listen to your band. You know what I mean? I have so many friends like that in bands where, and I know it's the same, you know, it's, you meet so many cool, like-minded artists on the road where it's like, you know, I just feel connected and naturally, you know, a friend because of, you know, how similar our lives are and how, you know, we both choose the same creative outlet.
It is funny, though, how, yeah, we all seem to listen to, like, bands like Hot Water Music and American Nightmare, yet none of our bands sound like Hot Water Music or American Nightmare.
I know. It's so funny. Like, you know, I look at, like, even in the Color Morale internally, like, our band is so diverse as to what we listen to, what we're influenced by. Like,
right.
You know, you always get those, like, hey, make us a Spotify playlist of, like, you know, your top three favorite bands of all time or three favorite songs. And it's like, you look at that list and you're like, dude, like, really? This is crazy. Like,
I know. We're the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like there's parts of our bands that wouldn't be who we are without those influences, you know,
absolutely. And I think the ethic too is the biggest thing, right? Because
there's
a big difference between, you know, whatever, if you, I don't know what you want to call Color Morale. Like you're not a punk band. That's for sure. Neither is Silverstein. However, like growing up with punk rock, our ethics are punk rock, you know, like you're at the merch table, you know, I mean, not just after shows, you're there the whole time. You're there, like you're accessible to your fans. Like anyone that didn't grow up the way you grew up, you know, where kids are skating with the bands and then everyone just goes on stage, like wearing what they were wearing or whatever, like moshing for other bands. Like that's the way you grew up. That's why you have that mentality. And that's a big part of what you represent and who you are.
Yeah. Those were the bands I connected with and watched every weekend, you know, like,
man, that's right. That's the thing, man. The music is secondary to the ethics. And that's like a big thing that when people say, oh, they're not punk rock, it's like, well, they might not play punk rock, but they're punk rock. You know what I mean?
So it was cool. Like getting to grow up and see, I mean, back in the day, like you name it, like seeing bands like Face to Face or Mill and Colin or, you know, man, there were so many bands that came through that skate park back in the day. And this is when I was like, you know, 14, like the first concert I ever went to in my entire life, I saw Guttermouth. And that was like,
wow, you really know, took it the other way there, man.
Yeah, that was
it's
just
a good thing
like
you didn't follow in their footsteps. I don't know what you'd be telling kids.
Yeah, and it's, you know, from then on, like I had certain friends in my life. One of my best friend, Greg Dixon, he introduced me to so many bands back then. Like that's, you know, through him I found Propagandhi, and through Propagandhi I found Yeah, how to talk about reality, you know, whatever your reality may be, just how to be just completely honest through your music, you know, no matter right. what genre, no matter, you know, that was one of the bands that I found young that I, you know, man, why not just put nine tracks of the word fuck being yelled 1,000 times, like, you know, but at the same time, like, they had some of the most serious political views. You know, I didn't know anything about politics when I was young, but
propaganda is like the whole reason I'm a vegetarian. You know, I was vegan for a while. Like, single-handedly, like, without that band, I don't think I would have ever learned, you know, about that whole world and everything, you know? So they're one of my favorite bands and one of my biggest influences, just not even musically, just like in my life.
Right.
So absolutely, man.
Yeah. That seeing bands like that, you know, poured a foundation before I even wanted to be in a band, you know, like,
yeah.
I remember we booked a band, Equal Vision. I have so many stories from those days. Like, I could be on here all day with stories from the skate park days. But do you remember a band, Equal Vision band called Fairweather?
Yes, I do. They were awesome.
Seeing that band, that made me want to sing. You know, like the first time I saw Fairweather, like, that the dude that sang in that band was incredible. He's like, had one of the coolest, like, unique tones to a voice I'd ever seen.
Yeah. But,
you know, seeing them play, that made me like, wow, I like everything about this band. Like,
that's funny. They rolled through town, here in Toronto area. I don't remember where the show was. I think in the suburbs. And they had the same reaction. Like, people love that band so much from seeing them live.
Yeah.
And then I remember getting their record and being like, the record's good, but like, their live show was what?
Incredible.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm staring at a poster right now that was like a promotion poster we had at the skate park that I have framed on my wall right now to remember that moment.
That's,
you know,
awesome, man.
But isn't it wild? Like, we can make those moments for kids now. Like,
yeah.
You ever just get like, that's, you know, I have that epiphany all the time where I'm like, I get to create those moments for other people now. It's
amazing how long it took me to realize that. I never, you know, like the first time I ever saw a kid with a tattoo, like, of our artwork, my initial reaction was, I just ruined this guy's life. You know what I mean? Like, this guy's going to have this on his arm forever. And I just, you know, and it took me a really like long time to understand that the passion I had for music of all these bands, like, somebody was feeling that way about my music. I swear, like, there's even times now when that doesn't quite compute, you know? And I guess the realization of that is probably important, and important for your confidence too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. Like, you know, I'm a grown adult man now, and I'm sitting here looking at this poster that just, you know, instantly connects me to that moment. And to know that I can create that moment literally every day if I chose to, that's why I like being at the table all night. That's why I don't like having a, you know, a rock star wannabe mentality.
Absolutely.
Of, you know, being make myself less accessible so I can appear to be more important. I don't give a shit about all that stuff.
There's definitely that, you know, mystery that certain bands want to have. And I think that's kind of going away more and more with social media and stuff and people putting themselves out there. But I want to ask you, so at this point in your life, you're seeing Fairweather and they're the band that makes you want to sing, and you're getting this taste of what it's like to be in a band, playing shows, being able to express yourself. Was that it for you then? Was there a moment there where you were like, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to do?
No, I don't think. I think it took me a long time to figure out, you know, not divesting from prior interests or hobbies or goals, but figuring out a way that I could just maintain and continue being a right-brained creative artist.
Okay. Yeah.
I guess as life has gone on and as I've had multiple experiences, through many facets of life, I think I just want to continue being myself. And it took me a long time to figure out what that meant. I think there's a lot of right brain individuals that get forced into a left brain life.
Oh yeah.
And for me, there's no question, you know, yeah, for me, it's, you know, money, it takes a little bit of money to live and be happy and be secure. And, you know, at this point in my life, I'm right where I feel like I can do the most good with who I am. You know, I feel like that old cliche, like secret of life, like what's the meaning of life?
Sure.
I feel like it's using your creative ambitions and talents to help other people deal with, you know, whatever situations they're dealing with in life. Whether that's scrutiny or whether that's, like a celebratory, you know, like you can do both as a singer in a band. Like we can have shows and have kids have a blast and have a, you know, connect to one another and meet new people and friends as we did growing up in that surrounding, right. You know, that's, no matter how old I ever get, you know, I feel like if you get to that point where you're like, I'm too old, like you just died, man. Like you're
I think
never
so too
old.
Man. But I think like, you know, you're not a, I think we're about the same age. How old are you?
I'm 34.
I'm 35. Yeah. So we're about the same age. It makes sense. We like all the same bands. But no, it's interesting though. I mean, like you don't look very old. People always tell me I look good for my age. I still get ID'd sometimes when I buy like lottery tickets.
That's the best.
But honestly, dude, I think that doing what we do, keeping your head young, keeping your mind young, hanging out with people younger than you, I think that that kind of works, you know, to get into that mindset.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I really do think there's something to that whole, you know, that just having still having that youth energy. I think it works.
Yeah, it's it helps having good genes, I guess.
Yeah.
I get that all the time. Like I'll tell somebody on tour, you know, and they're like, "Wait, what? Really? Like I thought you were like 24." And I'm like, "Sure.
Yeah,
that's fine."
Yeah, you look like a young buck, man. So yeah. So keep it up. Okay, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back with Garrett Rapp of The Color Morale. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or that show you want to go to. And none of these older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go when I need tickets to something. Just a couple weeks ago, one of my favorite bands, Brand New, was in Toronto, and I had a ticket, but I needed to get one for a friend, just a single ticket. So I quickly went on the SeatGeek app right on my phone, and I was able to find a super good price. See, everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites, ensuring you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save time and money. Also, SeatGeek wants you to get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. So immediately, you'll see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. But hey, best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter the promo code SHANE20, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made the first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code SHANE20 today. Seriously though, I know you're going to shows. I know you're going to concerts. Why not get $20? Why not do it? So real simple. Once again, go get the SeatGeek app, settings and tab, add a promo code SHANE20, boom. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. SeatGeek's the best. I use it all the time. So check it out. But I got to ask you too, you say you struggle with depression. I'm sure it's a lot better than it was, you know, years back. But it must be so difficult for you just night after night, day after day to have to you know, do you ever feel like you're obligated to be there for these kids? Like they expect you now to be at the merch. They expect you to be available. You know, you have to listen to people's problems and you have to know what to say. And there must be times when you're just tired and there's times when you're going through something yourself where it's just hard to be available. Is that something that is a struggle for you?
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, I try to always be friendly and be polite and affable and be welcoming. You know, you should never make a kid feel like they're a nuisance or they're, you know, a burden to you. Like I'm lucky that I'm lucky I get to be at the merch table for 2-3 hours a night. Like, you know, but at the same time, as a human being, like, yeah, that being on tour in general is a very taxing experience in life. So I feel like it's a double-edged sword. Like there's a personal reward for me when I know I'm doing something good for someone. But it comes with a price, you know, like Warped Tour, we played one of the Canada dates of Warped Tour. On Warped, I'll go to our table every night right after our set. You know, the band will do its full band signing, but I'll go to merch like directly after I walk off stage, and I'm down there and I'm winded and I'm sweaty and I'm tired. And that's not even the hard part. The hard part is when you have a line full of kids and, you know, one after another, after another, after another are dealing with such heavy life experiences, you know, like the self-harm thing. You know, I decided to talk about that a lot on our last record, and I had to do so because people don't understand, like, you have 100, 200, 300 people a day come up to you and show you, you know, regardless of what your opinion is on if this is for attention or if it's for, you know, it's kids being kids, like whatever it may be, you might not have had someone come up to you in tears talking about their son that killed himself because he was bullied in high school, or seeing this beautiful young lady with just scars up and down her arm, hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, open, you know, that's shit that I see every single day. And it's, you know, it bothers me that if I choose to make a record and talk about it, you know, so I've seen people say, you know, oh, the Color Morale, like it's a sellout band that talks about stupid shit like scars and harming yourself and blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, you don't understand the things that I see or the things that I hear on a daily basis. And it's gotten to a point now to where, I mean, I'll be sitting in total silence and I'm just like, I try not to let myself get too personally invested in trying to help everyone because I can't.
Yeah.
That's why I work with Heart Support a lot. That's why I work with Hope for the Day a lot.
Yeah.
Those are two non-for-profits that I know I can direct people, and, you know, sure, young people that
we
are.
We work with Johnny and Jake. Like,
yeah.
You know, they are great people and they are really trying to make a difference. So, but dude, I mean, that's the thing, man. Like, especially dealing with what you deal with yourself, like, there must just be days. I mean, you got Warped Tour coming up too. I mean, you know, are you. You must be excited, but then at the same time, like some stuff, it just must be so difficult. Oh my God.
Well, it's almost like a, you know, it's a challenge. Like, are you going to carry this and rise above it? Or are you going to let it swallow you?
Yeah.
And those are the things that I deal with when I'm on tour. You know, I've noticed like this last year, I've been drinking way more than I ever have in my life. And I've kind of been like stepping back and really analyzing that, like, am I doing this as like a coping mechanism? And maybe I'm not even aware of it. You know, and it's something I've kind of tried to nip in the ass before I let it, you know, really, I've seen a million friends, you know, swallow up their careers and lives, you know, because they start abusing a substance too much.
It is interesting, right? Though that about that thing, like, I sit here and, you know, I drank last night and I drank the night before. Like, you know, when you start counting back the days, you know, and you realize you've drank for how many days in a row, and you know, especially with our lifestyle, like if we show up to work and we've had a couple drinks, like no one's going to say anything to us. Do you know what I mean? Like it's part of our, it's okay in our job, right?
Yeah. And that's never a prerequisite.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you can't do that if you work at like an office job or something, right? So, I don't want to make that an excuse, but at the same time, sometimes you wonder, oh yeah, like having a drink is fun, but yeah, you kind of don't realize sometimes maybe you subconsciously do need this as a coping mechanism. And I'm like, I'm kind of there with you too. And talk about, I'd say in the last year, I've been drinking more than I ever have too. And I, you know, I don't know, man, that's really, really crazy. You bring that up.
Yeah. It's almost like a, you know, since we've been home, this is the longest the band has not been on tour since we've been a band. You know, we had a lot of preparation going into the new record and a lot of time to write. Aaron and I were actually flying back and forth to LA doing co-writes with a ton of people.
Oh yeah.
You know, this is the first time we've actually really had time to write a record, since the band started, you know? So it's, I noticed that, you know, I've spent a lot of time in LA and I've been around so many different kinds of people and, you know, nothing's ever affected me in the past. I mean, even growing up in, you know, in post high school time, you know, the skate park days, like everybody got into drugs and it was just never my thing. It was, you know, and now you look at like being a full-time musician on tour all the time and, you know, how accessible the party lifestyle is. And it's like, man, that was never my thing. Why now? You know, like, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately. It's,
yeah,
man. I feel like, well, when you're,
I gotta say, man, sorry, go ahead. I interrupted.
Oh, that's okay.
I was just,
I guess.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Shane.
No, you go ahead.
I guess you get to a certain point and it's like, you know, it's really hard to sum up. Like, maybe it's a way of coping with talking to so many people about such serious subject matter. Maybe it's a way, you know, when you're in a band and the band grows and things kind of become commercialized and less organic and, you know, maybe this is my way to deal with, like, I can't ever let this become a gimmick, because if it does, then I am the epitome of everything I wanted to be and didn't want to be as an artist, you know? So I kind of feel like that's something I've struggled with a lot lately is making sure that this band never becomes a selling point or a gimmick. Well, that's not why I talk about what I talk about.
Well, that's the thing.
Know?
I mean, I've heard people even say that about Color Morale. Like, it's almost like they've taken this too far, that it's like they're profiting off of people's pain, you know?
Yeah.
I defend you guys and I say, well, you know, you don't really understand, because I'm there too. And I'm like, maybe I was, I don't know if it was a good decision. It wasn't a conscious decision, but I've always like been open to talk to people about anything, but I have always put a bit of a wall up between my own pain and the pain other people are going through, to where maybe people aren't, you know, they don't think I'm going to understand as much as you're going to understand, which is why I've seen, you know, the piles of letters that you get on a daily basis and everything. You know, and I don't know, like, that's tough, man. I mean, do you think there's ever going to be a time when you're going to have to say, I just, like, I need to work on myself and, like, sorry, I just can't talk to people for a tour? Or do you think that you're just too invested, like, not invested, vested in this, you know, that you've taken it this far now and you kind of can't go back?
I think that's something in the past few years in touring, you know, I look back and, oh yeah, you guys did a tour with them, right? Like, are they pretty cool dudes? And it's like, man, I'm not really sure. I didn't hang out with anyone that entire tour, you know? And
right.
My reason for that was between talking all night at a merch table and then getting in the van and having to just decompress and really just settle down. You know, I've been kind of, as much as I've talked to everybody, as far as fans or showgoers goes, or online and social networking, or, you know, in messages or letters, or, you know, at the same time, like, I haven't really been able to go and enjoy my time with me, you know, and with hanging out. One of my favorite things to do is just go out and have a couple drinks with friends and just talk about the old days or talk about life, or, you know,
yeah,
just connect. That's one of my favorite things to do, because I never had that when I was young, you know? So I guess I can't ever get in the, you know, I'm in over my head mindset, but it's like, you know, I don't ever want to invest in the opinions of people that don't know me or know the color morale or know, you know, you can't do that. That'll literally just drive you insane if you're trying to please the world.
Right.
I know what I do and I know why, and I know, you know, anybody that thinks that the band does this for a profit gain, like, dude, I still make way under minimum wage, so you can write that one off instantly. So, you know, I look at, like, you know, talking about like tattoos, like, you know, I just had a big wall flag created that's going to be in a pre-order package for the record. I've always saved every Color Morale tattoo photo that I've found, like, since day one.
Right.
And I think this flag has like 3,800 tattoo photos.
3,800?
Yeah. I was,
wow,
insane. Like, I couldn't believe this when I just sent the file and I looked at the photo count and I'm like, this is 3,800 photos. Like, every Instagram, every Facebook, every tweet, every in person, you know, I've saved and put in a file.
That's very cool. Very cool.
And at that point, it's like, you know what? Whatever I'm dealing with today, whatever someone's opinion on YouTube is, whatever anybody has to say, I did something good with my time here. If this created something or inspired somebody to do something positive with their life, great. I did something with mine. You know?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I get that. Yeah. Well, back to drinking. A Warped Tour, it's going to be... I mean, yeah. It's a bit of a, that's the thing about Warped Tour is people don't understand. It's like, you're on stage for 30 minutes, you got a signing, there's a lot of sitting behind the trailer pounding Bud Lights. Like,
oh yeah.
How are you feeling about that? Actually, I had a fan question. There's a few fan questions. I thought I wanted to incorporate some fan questions because, you know, you're so close with your fans, and Jersey Sky asked that. She asks, what are you most looking forward to and dreading about Warped Tour? So let's address that.
I think I'm most dreading the intensive heat.
I know.
You know, that's like, everybody asks, like, what's one of your, like, tips for Warped Tour? Like, dude, water. Just bring as much as you can drink. It's you know, some of those days in, like, Florida or like Vegas, ugh, or New Mexico, they're just so hot.
Is there a
hot
Vegas date this year?
I believe so.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, rough.
Yeah, so it's, you know, that's, I'm probably dreading that the most.
Yep.
And I feel like that's, you can't really let yourself dread anything. Warped Tour is such an amazing time, an amazing experience. The fact that it's been going on for as many years as it has. And you ever think about that? Like, they set this up and tear it down and move it to another city every day.
I know, it's insane. Like, it's
that
amazing.
Blows my mind. Like, so don't let yourself, like, complain or, like, bitch about anything. Like, it's
right.
Just incredible. You know, the fact that even exists. Like, kids don't understand how much stress and how much insanity goes into keeping a festival like that going for this many years.
No,
so
it's true. I have a lot of respect for Warped Tour too.
Yeah,
you know, and everything that they've put together, and Kevin and Lisa, like, holding down the fort all these years. I gotta ask you though, like, there has been some controversy the last couple of years. I know your friend Johnny Craig, you know, I know you guys are super tight. You know, he was kind of at the forefront of it last year. Did you have any reservations about the tour going into it? You know, how that was handled? I'm sure you heard about it.
And
I'm kind of just wondering your stance on it and your take.
I mean, I guess here's the thing. Like, I know, you know, Johnny's had his experiences and his problematic recurring situations. But at the end of the day, nobody's perfect. People fuck up in life. That's part of being a human and part of learning and growing.
Yeah.
There's good people in the world. There's bad people in the world. Good people do bad things. Bad people do good things. I guess it's, you know, like, I see so many stories on the front porch step, dude. You know, and the whole, like, young people and Warped Tour, and, you know, like, I see a lot of talk about that now associated. The only talk I ever like to include with Warped Tour is just how much fun it is and how great it is that that exists. Like some of the best music experience I ever had, back in the day, there was a music festival called Cornerstone. It was like
a big
Christian music festival. And, you know, I think I went to like six or seven of those in a row. And that was like the most amazing experience. Just you camp for like a week and you got to see all these like awesome bands, like As Cities Burn and, you know, gosh, who else? Anne Berlin. And, you know, there's just so many cool bands you get to go and see. And that was such a fun experience. So like, it really bums me out to see, I mentioned something, I brought up Warped Tour the other day talking to somebody and they were like, oh dude, I heard about that guy on Warped Tour. Like, what guy on Warped Tour? And they bring up the like Front Porch Steps story. And I'm like, dude, that just bums me out that the first thing somebody would, you know, somebody would attach to the name is some dumb headline making story. Like,
yeah,
that has nothing to do with Warped Tour. That has nothing to do with the music scene. That has nothing. That's a problemed individual,
right,
that made some huge mistakes.
I do agree with you, except I do think that the whole culture surrounding it, you know, like it needs to change because that can't be tolerated. You know, that can't exist. And the fact that it does exist, you know, there are occurrences. I'm not just talking about Warped Tour. I'm just talking about the whole scene. You know, those are things that I think really need to be addressed. And I just wondered, you know, I don't know. Has there been any talk, like, because you guys are doing the tour and it starts like very soon. Has there been any talk from Warped Tour? You know, is there any briefing with anything of the bands of, you know, any new like policies or anything in place?
I know there's a big meeting the day before the production day.
Okay.
And I'm sure this is going to cover, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
But you know, I think people read things on the internet and they're so quick to invest on what's said on the internet. For me, I've never once felt like Warped Tour was a threat or anything like that. I think that's, you know, that's crazy. That's like saying going to the gas station is a threat because there could be some, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that that's fairly accurate. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that you have to, I mean, there's always that whole thing, like what people want to say, like, oh, well, you know, yeah, drugs are dangerous. Yeah, well, driving in a car is dangerous. You can die in a car. It's like, well,
right.
You know, you got to be careful with that analogy. But I do know what you mean. I think there is a lot of stuff overblown about the dangers of Warped Tour. Like the second a young girl walks in, there's going to be like some guys trying to, you know, whatever. I don't, you know, it's not like that.
No, not at all.
So I think
all.
That's, I mean, a big, you know.
I can't count how many times that I would, you know, a couple summers ago, I'd be sitting in a lawn chair hanging out with the Vanna dudes or hanging out with somebody, you know, that we're friends with. And it's like just a good time. It's just laid back and everybody's grilling out and,
yep,
you know, having a couple drinks. And it's, you know, I don't even remember anybody under the age of 21 being around, you know, like.
To be honest with you, I don't really remember. I don't really see that either. Yeah.
That was not a problematic thing at all. It was, you know, I feel like that's been blown up. Like I read some kind of, somebody was starting a petition to make all the crew or something be 21 and over. And it's like, you know, is this really like this big of a deal? Or is it just kind of the internet that's made it this big of a deal? You know, like, I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, why 21 and over? Just because of drinking?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Like,
okay, whatever.
I don't know. It's weird. or 18 and over, whatever it was.
Okay, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, I don't think I've ever met a crew member on tour that was under 18. I don't know.
No,
I was just like,
I don't think so. No.
That's, yeah,
that would be kind of crazy. You have to get a note from their mom or something so they can come.
Yeah, just kind of like, I don't know.
Anyways, man, let's get into these fan questions. Justin Bracken wants to know about your daily diet.
Oh man, that's a work in progress, constant work in progress.
Taco Bell.
So I've been like, I've gone back and forth. It's like an ever going teeter totter of life where I'm like, you know, I try to maintain a somewhat healthy diet, but keyword try. Mm-hmm. You know, I love bread. I love food. I just love to eat. Like, so, you know, my whole family, like we're a love handle family. Like, nobody in my family's fat or, you know, obese, but it, you know, we all have these stupid love handles that just won't go away unless you literally eat salad all day, every day of your life. So it's just, it's like, you know, I try my best to eat healthy and stay healthy, and drinking water is a big one. Especially as a singer, you know, the first place water goes in your body is your mucous membranes, which your esophagus is lined with. So I try to drink as much water as I can.
That's the key. Yep. You got it.
A human being should be drinking half their body weight in ounces a day. So, you know, that's like 90 ounces a day for me. So that's my biggest thing, is just make sure you're drinking enough water.
Absolutely. But the other thing, though, I wanted to ask you before, but I didn't. I mean, you go into the table and talking to kids in the loud environment for like 2-3 hours. Doesn't that wear out your voice?
Like, oh,
that
yeah.
That must be,
yeah,
so hard. Like whether it's before you sing or after you sing, like, that can't be good.
Oh yeah. It's brutal sometimes. Like, I'll have nights where, you know, my voice is already shot before we even play. And it's just, you know, well, if my vocal cords aren't there, I'll try to speak louder with, you know, with my, what I'm saying and, you know, the point I'm trying to make. Maybe I'll try to speak a little louder in that department tonight if I don't have the
yeah,
voice for it.
Geez, yeah,
and then you sing and you scream and you know, like, a lot of times my diet gets poor on the road because I don't have time to eat until, sure, we get to a gas station at 1 a.m. And then it's like, wow, I haven't eaten anything since a Starbucks bagel this morning. Like, I'm starving. Yeah. But now I'm gonna stuff body with all this food. It's terrible. But, you know, I'm like always sick too, because I'm always hands and you know, giving hugs, and you know, so I'm always sick. But, you know, you can't ever use the, like, well, I sounded bad tonight because I'm sick. Like, nobody cares. You can't use that excuse. You know.
Yeah, it's true. Well, there's a few questions. This is sort of related. There's a couple questions. Shadley Cooper and Colin Frossell, they're both asking you about your screaming, which I guess has changed. People think it has changed dramatically over the last couple records.
Yeah.
Is that a conscious thing? What's the story there?
Yeah, that's back in the day, in like beginning Color Morale days, when we started Color Morale, we got rid of the second vocalist, to where, you know, the band at that point, myself included, was pretty heavily influenced by bands like Misery Signals.
Oh, great band.
So, you know, we were at that point, we were more of a metal infused, metalcore band, I would say.
Yep.
And I, you know, I had a completely different vocal delivery. So starting the third record, I got into a point to where doing vocals that way was in, you know, I had some vocal lessons, and I started learning that the way I was doing vocals wasn't correct. I was actually harming my vocals. So I know I needed to change something. It was kind of the exact same dynamic that Caleb found, you know, Caleb Shomo.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with him. He had a completely different vocal style in Attack, and, you know, he was hurting his voice, and it was working harder, not smarter. So going into the No Hope record, I actually learned, there was a band called Close Your Eyes who lost their front man,
okay,
at that time.
Yeah.
And they'd asked me to fill in, a tour. They were going to Europe with Under Oath. And they asked me if I could fill in and do the tour with them. So I learned like a 13 song set, trying to emulate Shane's vocals. And in doing so, I was like, dude, I can do this. Like, I can play 13 songs and sing a falsetto note when I'm done. Like, this
wow,
doesn't hurt my voice at all. So, I learned that I didn't really have to preconceive a vocal delivery. It just came out. So that was, I found what I should be doing as a, you know, a quote unquote screamer, I guess. So that explains the big change, from the second to the third record. And I think when people hear this new record, they're going to be completely shocked again. I totally stopped screaming on the record.
it's funny. I listened to an interview where you said that, and that was my next question was, is the new record have any screaming on it?
Yeah. I totally stopped screaming. We've got three, four songs where Aaron is actually, our guitar player, is doing all the screaming. Aaron's voice is just incredible for that.
Cool.
So it's like we have this very strong asset to the band that isn't being used at all. And I don't want personally to scream anymore. I really enjoy singing. And for me, you know, as I've kind of grown and things I'm into musically right now, I don't really want to do that. So, you know, Aaron listens to, you know, gosh, I can't even think of some of the bands he's into right now. Like, I know he's always into Misery Signals. He always loves.
So he's like the metal guy.
He's the metal dude in the band. Yeah. Like, so, you know, I think people are going to hear it and they're going to love it because he's a phenomenal screamer. But this record is very, very first chorus, very structured. And just, I think these are the best songs the Color Morale's ever written.
Right.
You know, we've been so focused on technicality and writing things that are cool as bandmates, to where a couple of years, like thinking about the songs that you listen to, why do I still listen to that Jimmy World song from the Clarity record? Why do I still listen to this song? You know, what is it about that connected me to make me still 10 years later, listen to it? And I think this record is when Aaron and I, especially, really came together as songwriters and learned how to write good songs.
Yeah. That's the key,
you know,
man. Yeah.
Yeah. Not when the melody comes before the lyric. I know every song on this album we wrote on a piano before a lyric was added. We've never done that as a band before.
Well, I always say, man, if you can strip down a song to just, you know, chords and a melody and it's good, it will always be good. It doesn't matter what style you put on it. You know, whether it's metal or metalcore or deathcore or whatever people are calling music at this any given year. It's like if you strip it down to chords and melody, that's all that matters. So I think you guys are on the right track. You said you worked with some co-writers. Was that the first time you did that?
Yeah, we actually it was cool. Like doing the Hold On Pain Ends record, we had a couple co-writes. At that point in time, I was so closed off to writing music with anyone that was not in my band. It was you know, I feel like I was almost like a detriment to our band because I wouldn't allow co-writes.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, we've still never done one. And I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of like, I still have that mindset that you did. Like, it's my band. I write the song. So I guess maybe once you get over that, it's probably liberating because you're like, wow, this is like really good.
Yeah, it's like you could never abandon yourself as a writer, but also keeping an open mind. I learned things in this record cycle that, you know, that have really been a focal point in my songwriting. One of them is, you know, keeping an open mind to pop sensibility.
Sure.
You know, usually, I mean, even in the past, I hate harmonies. I like vocal harmonies. I hate anything that is infused with pop, but how can you hate melody? That's just not, how can you be a musician and hate melody? That makes no sense at all. So
yes, it makes no sense at all. I mean, you're saying you love Jimmy Eat World, like that's the
like
they're all melody.
So like what am I so afraid of when it comes to writing catchy melodies? Like there's nothing wrong with that at all. So we did co-writes with let's see here, Scott Stevens, Matt Wentworth.
Scott Stevens. I only know the hockey player Scott Stevens, but
that's him. It was crazy. No.
Watch out. He's coming. He's going to nail you into the boards.
Yeah. So we did Scott Stevens, Eric Ron, Matt Wentworth, and Courtney Ballard. We did a lot of that's a very diverse mix of writers,
cool.
But also people that are all extremely experienced. And, you know, it's all people we know and have personal relationships with and we trust. So, you know, writing with Scott is a very, he's a really active rock guy.
Uh-huh.
He used to sing in a band called the X's, back in the day.
Okay.
And writing with him was, I learned something. Oh, and Arnold Lanny was another.
I know Arnold. He's Canadian. He's Canadian. I know him.
Yeah. So it was, I feel like I took something away with every one of those sessions. And I love the finished product came out. This is my favorite, these are my favorite songs we've ever written. The weakest song in this record could have been a single on the last one.
Wow.
The last record was, stuff Aaron and I in a room and write a whole record in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It was very rushed. It was very, I don't regret anything. And there's some really cool things that we did on Hold On Pain Ends, but, I feel like the rush of the music and the overall presentation kind of got a little lost in translation, but it still came out great and I'm proud of it. And I'm thankful for everything, that was done that Fearless helped us with. And, but this record just very, very prepared and well thought out. And great. These songs are great. I'm really excited to just finally release it. We've just been sitting waiting,
Oh, okay. So the record is done. You don't know when it's coming out. Do you have a date?
It's going to be August. Oh gosh. How do I forget this date? It's been said like 7,000 times.
August. It's a Friday. We know it's a Friday.
August 19th.
August 19th.
Yeah.
Perfect. Cool. Do you have a title? Do you have a title for the record?
Yeah, the record's titled Desolate Divine.
Desolate Divine. Awesome. And that'll be coming out on Fearless Records. Why the change from Rise to Fearless?
I think we just got to a point, our contract was up with Rise, and
yep.
Just wanted to try something new. I love Craig and Sean and Matthew and the Rise family. Still great friends. We still talk all the time. But it's, just wanted to try something new.
Oh, I get it. Rise and Fearless are both really, really great labels. So you guys have been lucky to be on two really great labels.
Yeah. And we had a bunch of meetings and met a bunch of, really, really cool people, really solid people. Before we chose Fearless, we felt like our goal as a band and our vision, really connected most with Fearless, to where, Fearless gives us the creative control, but they also give us the resources to make it bigger and reach more people. They're an amazing family over there. Like all the girls in the office and Chris and everybody over there, we love those guys.
That's amazing. No, that's great. That's great to see that. And, I expect big things from this record. I think it's going to be, huge for you guys, especially coming off, the entire Warped Tour. One more fan question and I'll let you go. This is from, this name must be a joke. Terry Hesticles.
Yes. I already love it.
Beautiful.
I don't care what the question is.
The question is cool. I wanted to ask you about this. It says, how were you able to play two shows in two countries on the same day?
Oh yeah, that was awesome. We had this festival booked in Canada, and at the same time, we were on tour with a band called Nothing More, and that show was in New York. So it was like our festival date, we were like the second to last band. It was like us, then somebody, then August Burns Red.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, you're going to have to cancel the festival or cancel this tour date. And it was like, well, dude, we're direct support for Nothing More. So, we can't really cancel anything. Like how can we make this work? So we got in touch with the promoter and kind of explained explained that we didn't want to cancel the festival. So he let us play an early set. We woke up, we played at 1 o'clock in Canada, drove, I think it was 4 or 5 hours to New York.
Do you remember what cities?
No, I'm sorry. This is not New York. That was Flint, Michigan.
Oh, okay, Flint, Michigan. So, do you remember where in Canada the show was? Because this is my neck of the woods, so I'm sure I know it.
Yeah, I'm spacing. It was. I'm trying to think of the name of the Koi Fest.
Oh yeah, Koi Fest, Kitchener.
Yes,
yeah,
Kitchener.
Yeah.
So it was Koi Fest to Flint, Michigan.
There you go.
And it was literally like play the show, pack up. We didn't even sell merch. I remember as the band was packing, I was flying back and forth to the trailer because there was, just a line of people wanting to buy merch, and we didn't even have merch set up. So it was like, a lady like came up and she really wanted to get a hoodie for her daughter, because her daughter couldn't make the festival. So I'm like, dude, what size? I'll run and grab it real quick. And I'm literally flying back and forth as the band's like frantically packing up so we could get on the road to head to Michigan. And, you know, we get in the van and we fly out of there and we get to Michigan as the first band started playing and set up merch and boom, two shows, hey, two countries.
It's a good thing you didn't have a long wait at the border. You
yeah,
know what I mean? The border horror stories, like you could have totally got fucked on that one, but it was
kind of like a never say die mentality. Like,
there you go.
Know, if there's a way we can do this, let's do it, man. Like, you know, make it happen.
There you go, man.
Well, it was a cool story. Like,
right
like
on,
two
man.
Countries in the same day. That's pretty awesome.
Right on, man. Well, hey, I will let you go. Thanks so much for taking the time this afternoon to jump on the phone with me. And enjoy Warped Tour. Enjoy the new record coming out. When is a new song going to be dropped? You know that yet?
The 23rd, the day before Warped Tour, actually.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so people have people, people look out for that. And one more thing, a fan asked you what the most meaningful song is. So what I want to do is, we always play music on this podcast. I want to play, you know, the most meaningful Color Morale song to you right now to end the episode. So would you mind introducing the song and just talking a little bit about it, and then we'll play it, and then you'll be on your way.
Yeah, I think the most meaningful song, if I had to pick one song, I would pick the one that I've seen the most connection. I think at the end of the day, the connections we make are what are most important in our life. They're definitely what's most important for our band. So we have a song called Strange Comfort. I feel like the lyrical content, the aesthetics of the song really deliver a strong point of talking to one another. There's a lyric in that song that goes, when we lose ourselves, we find each other. And I'm actually like sitting here looking at a picture or a poster on my wall that I had made of a kid in a wheelchair crowd surfing up to me at Warped Tour, the Colorado date. And he was autistic in a wheelchair, had a bunch of people lift him up in the back of the crowd and carry him up to me. And I put the microphone to him and he sang that into the microphone. It was one of the most powerful moments I've ever had in my life. And it was to that song.
Awesome.
And it was really cool. At that point told me that any struggle that I will have in my life, if I'm vocal about it and I express myself through my music and my creative talents and arts, I'm doing something good with my life and I'm doing something productive for someone else. I think that's the secret of life that I've found,
right,
where I'm at right now and so far. So
it helps them and it helps you.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, with that being said, don't ever worry about being too much of a fuck up to where you can't help yourself or help somebody else. You know, no matter what you've done in your life, you can still do something positive for somebody. So
absolutely, man. All right. Well, Here it is. Strange Comfort on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks a lot, Garrett. You have a great day.
Thanks so much, Shane. Take care.
All the best.